Good morning. This is Hour with Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. I almost said a Saturday morning program, but no, it's a Thursday morning program or Wednesday night. It's a program. It's about, well, generally science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. With me, Laura Ann Gilman. You'll find out just, you know, don't touch that dial. Yes, so those who have ever listened to me on Saturday mornings will understand that usually at that point, that's the beginning of the music mix. But no, not in the 90-minute slot. You know, as it is, they've taken half an hour away from Robert Knight's fabulous show, put me in, following me is Lister, who is just so amazing, so wonderful, has this incredible reggae, ska kind of thing. It's a great segue, actually, but the point is, it's a holiday week this week and next, and we are all going to be entertained by that, and hopefully by our show this morning. As Robert mentioned, as I mentioned, our guest this morning, do I have any announcements to make? Nope. On Christmas Day, you're watching Doctor Who, right? What else is there to know? No, Christmas Day during the day, what you're doing is you're going to go to theaters and you're going to see The Illusionist. Is that what you were going to say, Laura? No, what were you going to say?
I have no idea what we're going to be seeing on Christmas Day. Actually, I've given my sister the choice.
Okay. What would your choices be?
Am I going to lose totally all geek credits admitting I haven't seen the new Harry Potter yet?
Ah, it's very good. I really enjoyed it.
I've been too busy working to go to the movies, so this will be my chance.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But my choice is The Illusionist, which is Sylvie... now I'm blanking on his last name. It's this French animator whose last film was Triplets of Belleville, which I adored. I thought it was just a wonderful movie. And what has he done? But he's taken an unfilmed script by Jacques Tati, one of the best movie makers of all time, with Monsieur Hulot's Holiday and Mon Oncle and Playtime. If you're not familiar with Tati, then you're in for a treat when you finally get around to it. He's amazing. And Tati died before he could make this movie. And Tati's films are mostly speechless. They're not silent. They have a lot of music, but they're speechless. So this animator... Chomet, I believe his name is, C-H-O-M-E-T, took the Jacques Tati screenplay and working with the family has created the movie that Tati might have made had he lived in animation, following the style that he created in Triplets of Belleville and following the style of Tati's five emblematic films. So it's opening Christmas Day. And there are a lot of good films open that I haven't seen. I want to see The King's Speech. I want to see... I'm sort of blasé about Tron.
I'm not going to see it. I'm not. I have this very fond memory of how... really horribly wonderful the original was. Mm-hmm. And I think it should just stay there.
Yeah, it's a terrible movie. You're pantomiming, Robert. I have no idea what you want. Boy, that is a spiffy, like, trench coat. Just very journalistic.
Matrix.
Yeah, I was going to say very narrow. Oh, yes.
Black leather to the ankle.
Oh, is your CDs? Is that what you're here for? Okay.
I love you. I hate to interrupt. It's a brilliant conversation. You guys are cool.
So what movie are you going to a movie on Christmas Day? What are you doing Christmas Day?
Hell, I'm going to be a movie on Christmas Day.
You already are a movie, Robert. What are you going to go? What are you going to do? We're going to movies, different movies.
I'm going to follow the inspiration of the lunation of this past solstice. I overcame my fear of the cold and went out multiple times.
Did you watch the eclipse?
Oh, much like a good episode. Yes, I did. If you know what I mean. Many times I came back again and went out on the balcony and watched.
Astronomical and astrological reports on WBA.
It's all the same thing. It's about the biomorphic cosmology. And Jim,
at 1:30 in the morning, that makes perfect sense.
Jim, you as my inspiration at BAI, mm-hmm. and observer, you'll understand my appreciation of the brilliance of the edge tip of the solar illumination and the darkness of the rest of the moon. It's not even the colors for me. It's like the contrast of controversy, which is what we at BAI make an art of, as you have for so long.
What's the metaphor you? Yeah.
Metaphor you too.
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest, smartest shows on BAI.
I was going to say something similarly, Robert. Anyway.
I have not had enough coffee for this.
I got some metaphor to go, so I leave you now.
Robert Knight, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway.
Definitely not had enough coffee to keep up with you guys.
Laura Ann Gilman is the author of the popular Casa Nostradamus, speaking of all that stuff, books for Luna, the Retrievers and Paranormal Scene Investigations Urban Fantasy Series. I've only read one of each. I'm sorry.
I'll forgive you.
And the Nebula Award nominated, the Vinar Trilogy from Pocket, as well as, which book was it that was on the ballot this
Flesh
year?
And Fire.
Flesh and Fire, yes. Okay. I was on the Nebula Award ballot this year, which is, I mean, Hugo's are nice, it's fan, but the Nebulas are, to me, like, these are the people who know.
They're two very different, I mean, the Hugo is reader-voted, and it's huge.
Reader-appreciated,
For the Nebula, because it is voted
it's probably
by...
It's better known,
yes, the Hugo. But the Nebula is nominated by... other writers, other
peers.
Science fiction writers.
It's a peer award.
Exactly. And it's basically them saying, I saw that really cool thing you did there. So, that was fabulous.
Exactly. So, a Hugo Award is, I've arrived. A Nebula Award is, I'm good.
I done good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the difference is that, it's not just commercial.
But then it also says you got to up your game for the next book. So
it does. It's scary. I think that this is another show. I'm going to be saying that a lot tonight. I think that careers have ended when people were so praised on so mightily a novel that they stopped trying to produce a next great work.
Well, you can freeze
because
yourself.
How do you top that? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, you have to pay. The rent, which is and how do you pay the rent and maintain high quality? That, by the way, dear listeners, will be the theme for tonight's show. So, her first story collection, Dragon Virus, will be out in winter 2010.
Actually, it's going to be in spring 2011. It got pushed back.
So one forward, one back. Yes. We'll explain that shortly. And she continues to write and sell short fiction in a variety of genres. She also writes paranormal romance under the name Romances? Romance. I would say paranormal romance.
Paranormal romance, yeah.
Yeah, it says romances.
Well, I write several of them.
Yeah, exactly. Under the name Anna Leonard. Laura Ann lives in New York City. And more information can be found online at Laura Ann Gilman. Let me spell this for you, and we'll do it again at the end of the show. That's L-A-U-R-A. You're looking at your radio, right? A-N-N-E-G-I-L-M-A-N. That's where... And you can follow her on Twitter at Lag Illman, L-A-G-I-L-M-A-N. That's actually how I remember to do the L-A-G. Mm-hmm. And so it's an easy way to find the tweets.
Yes.
Yes. For those who are captivated by the idea, by the way, I am Jim Freund on Twitter. That's it, J-I-M-F-R-E-U-N-D. Simple enough. I think I just sent a Twitter out 10 minutes ago. I've been playing with TweetDeck, and it's, you know, it'll tweet for you.
You've got it set on timer?
Yeah, I have it set on timer, so we'll see if it worked. Anyway, because they said, oh, yeah, we're just about ready to go on the air. Okay. Laura Ann was also, very interestingly, an editor for many years, starting in the 70s.
Ah, 70s, excuse me.
80s.
89.
Oh my God. You see, I'm trying to make myself younger. I'm trying to roll back the clock so this isn't 2010. So that's more like 1990, in which case saying the 70s would be thoroughly appropriate.
I won't tell you how old I wasn't in the 70s. In 1989 was when I started in publishing.
So you're one of those people who weren't born when I started my show.
Do you really want to go there?
No.
No. Okay.
No, but I do know that to be true.
Well, what year did you start?
72.
Oh, I was born then.
Oh. Yeah, look.
But yeah, in 89, started at...
And everybody, by the way, you ought to have seen that outfit at Cap Clave.
Oh.
Damn. Anyway.
Now everybody's going to go Google it and look for the photos.
It's there.
But yeah, I started in 89 as an editorial assistant and worked in publishing as an editor until 2002 or 2003, they start mm-hmm. to run together when I went full-time as a writer.
Yeah. And so what this means is somebody who really knows the ins and the outs of the industry, who has done it all pretty much especially when you start in the opening positions that exist as at a publisher. I've done that. I've never gotten beyond that. And even then, I was at Galaxy Magazine. Not the same. I did proofreading at Dell for Jim Frankel and for David Harris and for a couple of editors. And I was a freelance copy proofreader mm-hmm. and copy editor, which was, by the way, tremendous fun.
Yes,
but it is grunt work.
Yeah, you totally learn everything from the ground up. I was fortunate enough to start working as the assistant to the publisher at Putnam, which means I was handling manuscripts from people like John Sanford and Tom Clancy and so forth, really getting to see how the big dogs ran mm-hmm. and saying, that's going to be me, and you know, someday that will be me. But not yet.
No, but on the other hand, let's just throw out that stat. Pack of Lies. This is not a Pack of Lies. Pack of Lies is your 15th novel.
I realized that today. Mm. Yeah, my publisher sent me copies. Pack of Lies is the second Paranormal Scene Investigations novel, which comes out January 18th, I think, is the new pub date. And
it was going to be later.
It was going to be February 1st, and now, apparently, according to Amazon and Barnes & Noble, it's shipping on the 18th. Surprise! I picked the book up and looked at it and realized that it was my 15th published novel since 2004.
Okay, so let's all take a breath and think back. That is to say that in a wee bit over 6 years, because it's almost 2011, 15 books in 6 years. You do the math.
Well, it's not quite fair math because 2004 is when the first book came out.
It's not
to say that I started writing it.
That stupid thing. Shut up. I know what your name is. I call it the phone that dares speaketh its name. And it does.
Technology obviously rules your life because your phone is telling you what to do. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I think I started writing the first book, which was Staying Dead, in 2001, maybe. And it was finally published in 2004 after The story of how that sold really is proof that you just got to keep going and keep going and keep going, and then you'll find the right publisher and the right editor. Because everyone rejected it until a new imprint, Luna, came along and said, no, we like this, we want to do it. And it's now been in print continuously since 2004, which taint bad.
Luna has done well by you in Versa Luna Vice.
Luna has done very well by me, yes. They give me great covers. They let me write books that entertain me and hopefully entertain a lot of other people. So it's been fun working with them.
Yeah. Another event, was it today you found out about the Starred review?
It was actually on Monday.
And not your first Starred review.
Not my first Starred review.
Explain to listeners what that means.
Publishers Weekly does reviews of books, and they'll give a review, and then basically you get a Starred review if they think that this book is significant advancement or improvement over previous works. And they gave Pack of Lies a Starred review and said really beautiful things that made me blush and stammer and do a little chair dance. the first thing Monday morning when you click and you see this review.
Chair dances are good.
Yeah, and you just go, yes!
Of course, when I think of chair dance, I think of Liza Minnelli and Bob Fosse choreography.
If it was like that, I'm not sharing it with everyone. No.
But
and not like flash dance either. No.
Okay, but nevertheless, my fantasies run wild. But just on the word chair dance, that's it. Unless, you can always bring me down by saying, well, it's the WBAI chair gym. And he's doing a dance, and it's somehow like, okay, that's the dash of water.
I was going to say, come on, don't bring people down at this hour of the morning.
Yeah, really. Especially on a holiday week, right?
It's true, yes. Yeah. So however people want to imagine, no, I'm not going to go there because you people, no.
Yeah, speaking of holiday weeks, one more. I was going to make an announcement. Next week's show, now I didn't know what it was going to be until I asked Lorraine. About half an hour ago.
And I'm management. I'm used to telling people what to do.
Yeah. and so it's going to be I had three things. I have a Kathy Koch interview, four things, and the Pretty Red Ropes. I have a Kathy Koch interview, I have a Connie Wills interview, and I want to talk to you people or have you people just call in and talk with me. We're going to do a bit of the Connie Willis because she's always appropriate at holiday time and do a call-in. The week after that, I'm going, that's right. No, the week after that, I'm going to have John Joseph Adams on because he's leaving New York. He's going to California. So I'll have him on. He's an editor, by the way, and a publicist at Nightshade. But we're having him on as an editor. And then the week after that will be Kathy Koja. And boy, it won't be long after that we're going into the next fund drive. That's fund drive. Done with the announcements. Do you want to chat a little more? Would you like to start a reading?
Why don't we chat a little bit more?
Okay,
so fine. I can think about deciding what I'm going to read.
Okay, very good. Yeah. And I will pass back this pack of lies, which is a commonly used phrase in WBAI, but I don't think that they knew about the book yet. But having said that, you have found a niche. You have found niches, in fact. You're very, very, not only writing fun, good stuff, but you are hitting something that people want, not just the publishers, because the books are moving as well. The paranormal romance and all this good stuff. Would you attribute leading? Would you attribute any of this to the fact that you know the industry and are saying, okay, because some people say, okay, I go where the muse takes me. I don't write. My characters tell me what to say. And these are legitimate things.
Yeah, no. There are a lot of
I'm
people
not making
who,
fun of them.
There are a lot of people who will, follow their whim. For me, it's not so much that the muse directs me because I'm very much aware that all the voices in my head are actually me. I control my characters. They don't control me. They give me agita occasionally, but they don't control me. I don't think that what I write has anything to do with my knowledge of the industry, because if I'm going to spend anywhere from 6 months to a year writing a book, I have to enjoy it. If I don't, I might as well be – I should be doing something that pays better if I'm going to not enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm living with a book, it's because I want to write it. These are the stories I want to tell. writing about the Cosa Nostradamus, this magical community in modern America and the modern world, is a joy for me. I love these characters. I love the world. I love what I get to say in these books. Where my experience, my background does come into play is everything else. When I'm not writing, all of the endless work that goes into having a writing career when you're not actually typing and creating.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps me grounded and focused and aware of the fact that it's not a zero-sum game, that there are going to be good days, there are going to be bad days. Sometimes there are good and bad days. And I'm neither the most special snowflake in the field, nor am I, you know, even on the bad days, an utter loser. Nobody wants to talk to me. It's always somewhere in between.
I mean, Nebula Nam. I mean, that's special.
It is special. I think it was about two weeks later I had a proposal I adored rejected. You know, mm-hmm. you keep a balance.
By one publisher is, you know.
By several publishers, actually. But,
oh, okay.
But this is the thing. That happens. You keep writing, you keep working, and you keep aware of the fact that this is how the game is played. I've seen it from both sides. I've been the person to reject, and I've been the person rejected. I've had things accepted, and I've been the one to give an author the call and say, hey, great news, X and Y happened.
Right.
So it does give me perspective.
Okay. So that, and does that perspective help lead you to the markets, as it were?
No, what it did was give me the strength to say I'm not going to look at the market.
Ah,
because
that's very interesting.
The one thing that I know is that nobody knows what the heck is going to be next until it hits.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first sold Staying Dead, an urban fantasy with no vampires, no werewolves, none of that stuff, nobody wanted to touch it because it wasn't sexy. It didn't have a vampire. It didn't have all the tropes that were extremely popular then, because nobody knew that all of a sudden all aspects of urban fantasy were going to catch on fire.
Yeah.
When I sold this, and now we're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, in a couple of years, we'll have 12 books in the Cosa Nostradamus series in print.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good thing I'm still sitting. I'm sitting down because it still makes my knees quake. You buy the books and you write the books and hopefully people read the books that move them, and that is what knowing the market means. So, if you're in sales, it's a whole different story. But we're not talking about sales.
No, we're not. But there are. But then again, I have talked to a number of writers, big names in the industry. Many of them writing, you know, series that they didn't necessarily start but continued.
Mm-hmm.
And they do look at the market. They do try to prognosticate, okay, the future is going to be X, Y, and Z. And they do write toward that. And it's a crapshoot for some of them, I think, as you said.
Yeah.
I personally think your approach probably makes more sense because when I was involved in magazine publishing, the lead time was the phrase. I assume
yeah.
It could be used for books as well. Mm-hmm. The lead time from a virtual pen on paper to publicity going out is a minimum of what, 2 years?
For a book, now it's pretty much, depending on how fast you write and how fast they slot you in, anywhere from a year to 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, so if they fast-track you,
mm-hmm.
it could be as short as a year.
Yeah. And, I mean, the PSI books are coming out 9 months apart, which gets complicated because right now I'm doing revisions. Book two is coming out, I'm doing revisions on book three, and I'm writing book four all at the
wow.
same time.
Okay.
Which means sometimes I forget what happened in what book.
And actually, that would be a great question is, you know, what techniques are you using? Is it a matter of databases? Is it a matter of...
I'm very old-fashioned in this regard. I know a lot of people use software programs mm-hmm. and things like that. I have a bulletin board behind my desk with push pins.
With index cards.
Not index cards, just scraps of paper.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And I also have... Every time a book comes out, I will take a copy and go through it and mark in different highlighter colors and with different colored post-its where characters come in, where certain descriptions are, so that I can thumb through and check it.
Which is very interesting because you're cutting edge on using technology.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also old school researcher in a lot of ways. I was a history major. I like getting my hands dirty with, you know, actually looking things up. My first thought is not necessarily to use a search engine, but to see if I have a book on my shelf that's got the information.
Mm-hmm. I have all my books. I wouldn't give one of them up, but, you know, somebody says something, I'm always reaching for the smartphone or the latest toy. I won't say what it is other than shiny. And
very shiny. Yes, yeah. I got to play with it a little. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. As in Chrome shiny. Just leave it at that. And until yesterday, you could have gotten one free. Not anybody, but they were giving out 60,000. Yeah, that's it. It was 60,000 of these. And you had to sign up. But they only had like a 1 week window in which to do it. Although the application is still online. It's on Meyer Lemons. I don't know. It's been a tough week for me, too.
But yeah, I do keep things organized in that way. I also work with
but that's amazing.
Paper and fountain pens. Talk about old-fashioned. Because I like shaking it up. I like changing formats.
But besides the PSI series, what else is in the oven?
Well, there's the third Vine Art War novel.
Right.
There's Flesh and Fire. Then there's Weight of Stone, which just came out. Mm-hmm. And I'm working on the third book, which is The Shattered Vine, which will be out next October. Waiting on a revisions letter for that, which has been great fun working in epic fantasy traditions, very different from the urban fantasy detective mystery caper style that the Cosa Nostramus works with. This is much more lush and slower moving, almost. I had the word and I realized I had no idea how to pronounce it because I could spell it but not pronounce it. So just this
mesopoeic-esque?
Elegiac almost. Just this beautiful flow of words, much more literary, which was a lot of fun to write. A lot of fun and very difficult in a lot of ways. And I'm also have a short, as you mentioned, the short fiction collection that's coming out, Dragon Virus, which is something completely different from either of those two because it's science fiction horror short stories,
right.
Collected stories that all tie into the same universe and tell a story over a period of 100 years.
Yeah, and some of those are available on Smashwords?
No, some of the stories have been published before, some are new. The collection is going to be slightly revised new material. I think two or three of the stories have never been out before. It's been an interesting project, and
I'm just trying to tell people where to get it.
Yeah, well, it'll be available in spring from Fairwoods Press.
Okay.
A limited edition hardcover, I believe. Possibly trade. I don't think we've settled on the format yet. And I'm really looking forward to it because, as I said, I like doing things that are different. I like shaking up where my brain is. So right. I get to do urban fantasy. I get to do paranormal romance, the romantic side. I get to do this the darker science fiction horror aspect of Dragon Virus. The new project that I'm doing research on now that I hope to convince some publisher to pay me boatloads of money for is something completely different again.
Wow. Okay.
It's
but it's doing it all at once that's got me going. I mean, there are a lot of writers whose fiction is a moving target, and the only thing that unifies it is their voice. You know, the fact that you can read such and such a person and say, oh, yes, I clearly identify this as being from that mind because it has, you know, certain attributes. Well, a China Mieville, it doesn't matter if it's a mystery or this or that, there's going to be, you know, the China Mieville thing behind it, be it a short story.
Mm-hmm.
The City in the City versus Perdido Street Station, completely different, but both with his voice. And some people who write, wiggling his fingers, mainstream, and yet it's still their voice.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's no doubt that the author of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep is the same person who wrote Confessions of a Crap Artist. Although one is...
Very different books, yes.
Yeah, extremely different. Yes. And one is sort of a real world, and the other, very not.
Very not. And the question, of course, is which is which, yes.
Yeah. But to do that, yes, that's right, in his case, for Philip K. Dick's case, God only knows. But the idea is, what's astonishing to me is the fact that you're doing these concurrently.
Yeah. Periodically, I kind of stop, look in the mirror and say, are you insane? And the answer is yes. I refer to myself as the world's second laziest overachiever. I'm too lazy to be the first laziest overachiever. I am not happy unless I'm working. This is occasionally a problem. I mean, this just today I was saying I really need to take the rest of the year off. I can't because I have a deadline. The revisions are due January 15th.
Given that the year's about 10 days.
Well, but taking 5 days off for me is tough.